And yes, I may be crazy, but I am still here one more time on the morning and the morning edge on a Monday morning, no less. And here to the right is the one and the only and the great Augies.
Oh, my God. Good morning, Tampa Bay. I don't know if I can deal with all that lead up, but, you know, I think I'm going to quit. I'm going to take my marbles and I'm going to go home if I don't get treated better. I have energy. I'm not low on the totem pole. Mr. Trump keeps accusing me of that. I don't know if I can take this anymore. It's a madness. I'm not sure. And I don't like the Senate, says Mr. Rubio. He doesn't like that job at all. Well, I guess Obama had the same problem. Nonetheless, we have that situation. And, of course, underneath it all, there's the calm of Mr. Carson. Mr. Carson, Ben Carson, Dr. Carson, he's just lovely. He did cite, however, he did make a point in the days of slavery, as far as abortion is concerned, the raping of black women by white men was a common occurrence, and of course 75% of people that are black are partly white because of that. And, those children would have opportunities. A very provocative set of ideas when you think about it. Rape and incest. Now you have a confrontation for Mr. Rubio. What do you do with a 12-year-old child whose stepfather impregnates her? Should she be forced to carry that child to term? Oh, my goodness. The problems are afoot and array everywhere. And then there's Romney. He says, he took what I had as an idea and he ruined it. But it works. And nobody knows what to do about it. Goodness gracious, that's called Obamacare. And then Charles Blow refers to, well, we're coming into Halloween. The pillory of Hillary. The putting of the woman on the stocks for being a witch. Of course, I'm sure that many white Republican men think of Hillary as a witch. Lots of little problems, Floyd. I tell you, I don't know what to do, where to start.
Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to ask our listeners a question and see if they can give us an answer. There is somebody who's running for president who might be the first and only Seventh-day Adventist. And there's a possibility he or she may do it. If you know the answer to that question, give us a call at 941-745-1490. You might also even tell us what a Seventh-day Adventist is. So we're going to talk about politics a little bit today and some of the different candidates are going on, but that's our leading question, trying to get some caller participation today. Mm-hmm. So, Augie, what do you have?
Oh, well, I just think that the prison phones are maybe coming to the end of the problem that they are. That is, people who have someone in the local jail may actually get some relief. Families that have been forced to choose between buying household essentials and sharing a phone call with a loved one behind bars have long pleaded with the federal government to end the price gouging by the companies that provide phone service for jail and prison inmates.
Up to $14 a minute. Up to $400 a month they were charging families to make phone calls. So we have people in Ferguson, Missouri. They're basically using traffic citations in place of property taxes. And we have people in prison are using phone calls as a way to make a profit. $14 a minute.
Worse than that.
To call your family.
Yeah, they charge the inmate and they put it on his tab. And then if he's there for a month or so, then he gets these phone bills that he can't pay. He may be held in jail longer. It's debtor's prison by any other name. And if you can't make contact, It's just an extreme hardship. And it doesn't mean just black people. It's white people, too. I mean, the guy that does work for me had spent 5 months in jail rather than face probation. An amazing thing. He was such a gruesome task for him to try to make probation. And if he didn't make it, he got violated, so his sentence was extended. So you're constantly in this trap.
Wait. He didn't make probation or didn't make bail?
Well, he instead of doing bail, he did probation. He didn't have the money. Well, they gave him probation. He was not bailed out of jail. If the judge decides that you're going to get probation, they say you got to meet with your probation officer once a week or whatever time they set forth. And if you don't make that time frame and don't notify the probation officer, all sounds reasonable. Well, you're violated. Or if somebody says you got in a fist fight and you did something somewhat untoward, you get violated. And the violating of that throws you back into jail. If you want to bail your way out, then bail is your collateral to keep you in the system so that you don't run away, because you'll want your money back, or at least most of it, 10% of it stays with the people doing the bailout, the bail providers. In any event, I'm not going to be an expert on this at all, except that the issue of this particular individual was he didn't try for bail, didn't get bail, got probation, and then he decided, no, I'm not doing probation, I'm just going to stay in jail. And he is at the taxpayer expense at $100 a day. This is in Sarasota, $74 a day in Manatee. He just ate off the system, slept off the system, had medical care off the system. And
so he did this on purpose. He wanted to go to jail. He didn't want to satisfy the terms of probation.
Right. And the reason was he kept losing work, because he had to take a bike ride from where he lived for probation. And if he worked too long or over missed his couldn't take a bus, because buses don't work efficiently. And the bike had a flat tire one day. He wasn't going to risk any of that, and all of that. And
he doesn't have any sympathy for me in this case. He had a hard time. We do have a nice SCAT and MCAT here in town.
You're in Manatee County.
Yeah, no, there's an SCAT in Sarasota County
It's SCAT, but it runs only once every hour. You miss you have to wait a full hour.
So that means you have to get there on time.
Well, if you're working a job, or you're doing construction work of any kind and repair work and things like that, and you're trying to finish up, you have to drop everything and get on your bike and go, because these people are without cars and things like that. Most of the people are there. If you have a car and you have all of that and you have the insurance for the car and all those accoutrements, now you're in a better position. So, you know, and many of the people are in jail, black, white, or whatever, are relatively poor. They're not the middle class. They're low income people. I mean, I pay my guy $15 an hour, and he's very happy to work for me. And that's the other thing. If you get a decent employer, so to speak, that pays you decently, you're not going to want to risk offending that employer to go to a probation officer. I've even told my guy, I said, you need to go, I'll drive you there. And he feels embarrassed and so forth. But all those things aside, it's difficult. And I think the shoe is on the feet of the person who suffers the circumstance. But now, on top of that, when his mother died about 2 years ago, I called I've told this story before on the show. His mother was, I discovered that she was dead. It's a terrible story. It's a terrible story because of the circumstances of her death. And she was alone. She died alone with her dogs. And she was there for over a month dead in her house. And he lived with his mother, and that's the house he has today, this individual. And she was the dogs were not hungry when they found her and the dogs. So, in any event, when I tried to tell the people at the jail the circumstances, well, you can't talk to the prisoners here. We just don't do that. I said, well, let me talk to your boss. Well, did you understand my question? I want to talk to your boss. Are you going to tell me I can't? All right. and they were very, very rough and difficult. This is Sarasota County I'm referring to right now. And finally I got to a captain, and he said, well, we're not supposed to let you talk to the prisoner. I says, let me tell you the circumstances. He started choking up at that point, and then let me talk to him, but it was after a good half hour of hanging on the phone and arguing with people and things like that to let him know what his circumstances were. My wife and I paid for the cremation of his mother, and he couldn't afford it. He ended up working that off over time. This is an individual, one individual, and then the phone thing cost me $15 for 5 minutes. And that's out of Sarasota County. They have these ridiculous charges, as you asserted, Floyd, that people really have no grip or idea about.
And there, what's called kickbacks. Our political system has what are called bribes, which are also known as campaign contributions. And literally, the paper called it kickbacks, that the commission and the phones were given back to the companies and back to the prison officials. And it was just absolutely absurd. Up to $400 a month, $14 a minute. Now it's down to something like 11 cents a minute, which still can be expensive. At least it's something you can afford.
Right. Yeah, this article is in the New York Times. Families have been forced to choose between buying household essentials. These are the families of the jailed people. The FCC took a preliminary step toward that end 2 years ago when it found and limited what those companies could charge for interstate telephone calls. That's interstate, not intrastate, which is in the state. On Thursday, the commission went one step further when it set limits on what companies can charge on all inmate calls. There's one big task left to to apply similar rules to newer technologies like email, voicemail, person-to-person video, which are subject to the same kinds of abuses found in the telephone industry.
Mm-hmm. Prisons. And they're worried about, are they going to basically be planning crimes or trying to deal with contraband or stuff like that? But $14 a minute to talk to your wife, your kids, we're not talking 14 cents, we're talking $14 a minute.
Well, we know.
So three-minute conversation is going to cost you almost $50.
El Chapo, you know, he got out of the prison, and they dug a cell for him in a tunnel and reinforced it. The imagination of people that apply that to the poor is just amazing. It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. The idea that all the people in the jail are somehow really violent criminals, and there are very many, many of them are there for very minor situations.
If they're not violent offenders, they're not repeat offenders, nonviolent offenders, it's just absurd. There's really very little rehabilitation that goes on. Part of rehabilitation means that you have the family and the support system when you return home. And if you break those bonds that a person absolutely needs to have, if you put a person in jail and take away their job, that's what often happens. You lose your job if you go to jail. There are so many different ways with electronic surveillance. The monitoring, the ankle bracelets.
That costs money for the county.
No, the people pay for that, and it's so much less expensive if you have the prisoner pay for the ankle bracelet. If he takes it off, if he violates that, then put him in jail. But for heaven's sakes, for small amounts of marijuana or some of these petty crimes that are involved, you have these people who have been involved in the great recession that we just had, we're just starting to climb out of, who ripped the country off for billions of dollars. Not a single person went to jail. But we have the largest prison incarceration rate in the whole doggone world, 2.3 million people in jail, often for small crimes. Bill Clinton says we're going to get tough on crime. During his administration, they passed his three strikes, you're out, and other different laws like that. And what it resulted in are these mandatory prison sentences.
Well, actually, most of that happened in California, in the state of.
Yeah, it happened oddly enough.
But it was not on federal.
It had been oddly enough in Democratic state, and with a Democratic president. Both of those things happened with Democrat support. They were working with Republican legislators, but it really has ruined a lot of families, millions of families. Literally, we're talking 2.3 million people in prison, and they're rotating through over the past 15 years. That's millions of people put in there when they could have put them on monitoring, could have said, okay, you have an education program. We'll allow you to have get out a little bit quicker. We'll allow you to off the ankle bracelet monitoring quicker. There's you get a job, you do this. There's ways they could have handled those particular situations.
Well, what you could do along that line, Floyd, you could simply say you're sentenced to 2 years in prison. Well, guess what? You're sentenced to college. And we're going to hire someone with college background, and you're going to take all the things you need to get to whatever level. And at the end of 6 months or whatever time it is, whether it's online education or whatever, but you're going to do that as part of your sentencing.
And what they've done is they really have very limited computer access. There are online courses you can take, not just college, but GED. A lot of those people do not have high school diplomas. So you want to basically have an educational plan for them, a GED, a skill set they can get. If it has to, community college courses, there's a ton of online courses. But again, our idea is to use prisons for profit here in Florida, especially in the past 6 years under our current governor. It basically, campaign contributions go into him as a consequence allowing privatization of prisons. It's prisons for profit in Florida. There's no desire to decriminalize marijuana because it would reduce the prison population and reduce the profitability of prisons.
But you're just imagine the inventive Republican that says, well, government should be run like a business. Well, why not make the education business the government you put in play there?
Well, that's exactly what's happened. We had a Governor Scott appointee who was on the president of the Board of Trustees at State College of Florida. He now wants teachers to compete for their pay. That is, when they're first coming in, the word is bid. So you can basically hire the lowest quality teacher, the person who comes in the lowest. That's the future of the State College of Florida, to get the lowest bidding teacher to come in with the least credentials, the least experience, and put them there at the college. Take away continuing contract, which was not tenure. It was continuing contract. During my time at the college, they got rid of three people in my department for not performing adequately. It was not a lifetime guarantee. You go through a 3 to 5 year period of being vetted.
What jobs did they have?
Professors.
I mean, what were they?
They were in the business and computer science area. Mm-hmm. And I've had three people in my time have been let go because they were not doing, and that's just in my area, that have been let go. It was not tenure. It was not job for life. And you're constantly being evaluated as it goes on. But again, they don't want that. We'll be the only college out of 28 colleges in the state of Florida that will not have that. The only college where you bid for your job, so you're going to get the lowest paid, the lowest credentialed employee to be the professor teaching these individual students. SCF has a wonderful reputation. We do extremely well when you take our graduates and put them in Florida State or the state or USF and the different colleges around. Our students outperform most of those students who start out at Florida State or UF.
I think the community colleges have done a fine job. The only thing I was making, the point I was making, the segues out of and back into what you're referring to, is that you make the requirement of the person that's going to spend time in jail long enough to get an education. We pay for if we're going to put them in this housing called a jail, and then you educate them, and they come away instead of sitting with a roommate, learning how to rob houses.
Well, that is an education. You'll show them how to burglarize house, how to deal with drugs.
Yeah, that's an education too.
That's the education we're giving to people in jails now.
But you could do the other thing about.
But could give them real education to give them gainful employment, so they're not going to return to life and crime. Let them continue the relationship with their family, and one of the best ways is through emails and phone calls and stuff of that nature. Our prison system is broken. It's absolutely a disaster.
It's destroyed. It's destroyed.
And we complain about what happens in Cuba. We're saying, oh my gosh, they have political prisoners in Cuba. We have different people in jail for different reasons.
We're debtors' prisons anymore.
Yeah,
that's really what they amount to. And this country was formed by people who were escaping, guess what? Debtor's prison. It was debtor's prison in England that people were leaving to get the hell away from and to come to this country where the Puritans could do it to them.
That's exactly what we ended up having.
And we're back
at
this.
And it's a disgraceful situation. Yeah. But the only bright side of this is one of the few times that both Republicans and Democrats are recognized and the system is broken. And there is a movement, and hopefully what happened once we get a new House Speaker, in place, that we may see some progress on getting rid of this this situation that takes out of the out of the judge's hands the ability to reduce some of these citizens.
Mandatory.
It was mandatory.
Legislative tyranny, basically.
Yeah, and basically is. Yeah. And the judge has no say-so. So here you are. There was a guy who was attacked by his son-in-law. The son-in-law ripped out the guy's stitches. The man shot a warning shot through the ceiling. He's put in prison for 20 years for not shooting at him. He shot a warning shot. And that's, again, if he shot at the son and he missed him, it would have been legal. If he shot at the son-in-law and hit him, it would have been legal. If he shoots at the ceiling because he doesn't want to hurt the person, even though the person hurt him, 20 years. Governor Scott chooses not to have any kind of amnesty for him at all. He's sitting there. The woman who his husband threatened her and she shot to the wall because she didn't shoot close enough to him to accuse the fact that she shot at him. She's now in prison as well. This is just
so
absurd.
Really, the
20
state
years.
Is saying if you're going to shoot somebody, show that you're a good shot and hit them. Hit them somewhere.
Hit her or come as close as you possibly can and say, whoops, I missed. And I had second thoughts after I shot the first shot.
Yeah,
oh, here's an interesting thing. On the guns, and they segue. So we now have our legislators, one of them here, Stuby from Florida.
They said that there's
Manatee
another
County.
Way of spelling that.
So we have Representative Stuby here.
Right.
His father's a sheriff, and most sheriffs in Florida are opposed to these new open carry laws. But this representative, the son of a sheriff, wants to have it, and he wants to allow guns on college campuses, guns in football parking lots and in football games where you have beer and you have drinking.
Well, but Floyd, they have cage fighting. Why not have guns?
It's
put
amazing.
People in a cage and they shoot at each other.
But here's what happened over the past week. There was a dice game between some college kids. And the guy conveniently had a gun, and he went and shot the other person. Could you imagine if this was now legal to be carrying these guns on college campus? It wasn't college. The gun wasn't supposed to be there. But he shoots one of the people he's playing dice with.
I think we could have a game. The best shot is the one who can maim and not kill. That way they have repeat matches for the better shooter. I was, what's her name, Linda Rousey, or what's her name, the woman boxer, hit boxer, kick boxer, whatever she is, bantamweight. And it so happens my granddaughter is absolutely infatuated by her prowess and so forth, and she's never been defeated, and she usually wins in like a minute and a half or less in many of the matches. It's because the people she fights have no experience, and she's got all kinds of experience. But it's right next to cage boxing, and there's a real movement in this violent side of this country to restore this stuff where the blood and the gore and the beatings can happen. But now we could have shootings. We could have shootings with wax bullets. And if you can injure somebody bad, you know, the non-lethal bullet, so to speak, and you can have these contests, and you could bet on them, you could make money off of them. I mean, the incentive is just a magnificent spectacle of America at its worst. It's just amazing.
Well, you have bulldogs against the gators. And the rivalry, and you had the fights that happened. There was just a fight there between Venice.
Are you talking about actual bulldogs against actual gators?
I'm talking about the Georgia Bulldogs and the Florida Gators.
Oh, the one.
I'm talking about what happened in Venice and in I think it was Bradenton, one of the Bradenton schools. There was a fight afterwards, and they suspended several of the football players. The fact is that you have between either fans or football players, you do have fights that break out. And you have parents. There have been numerous videos in the past couple years of parents walking across the field and slugging referees. Just put guns in their hands. That's what we should do. That's what Stuby wants to do. Have more guns in those situations where tempers are high and testosterone is flying. And it's just appalling what may happen in the near future in our great state of Florida.
But you know, we've seen. Let's see. We've seen the enemy, and who was this? Pogo said this,
and they are us.
And they are us.
Yeah.
And here we are today, looking at what to do, what to do.
Well, the Florida Sheriff's Department, over 70% of the sheriff's departments do not want open carry laws. Over 70% of them, they don't want to have you carrying a gun in a holster into McDonald's, into your kid's school. I mean, could you imagine carrying guns into your child's elementary school, being allowed to do that? Could you imagine carrying a gun into McDonald's or into a bingo parlor or something like that, or into a bar, carrying guns into a bar?
You know that McDonald's, some years ago, I was in France, and there was a soccer match in Lyon, is where we were.
Soccer's crazy.
And this,
in Europe. They kill people over there in soccer regularly.
And I was pretty kind of careless myself in this situation. But at McDonald's, you can get a beer, you can get a glass of wine, along with your hamburger or whatever you order. And in comes traipsing a bunch of the fans because the match was over, and they came into McDonald's, and there were a bunch of, they were Welsh-sounding, but they were probably from near London, and they had this, and one of them was particularly obnoxious, and the threatening tone was building, and this one guy says, "You can't do what you did before, you'll get arrested and you'll be dead." What was the commentary? And it was pretty. It went on for a while. We were there. I was there with my daughter and my wife, and we were enjoying the glass of wine. And there was a musician in there, and this guy didn't like the music, and the guy wasn't very good, but the musician.
So this, you punctuate the beats with bam, 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 right?
So now you add to the mix. You add guns, and then you can solve things that way.
And that's exactly what the minority people do, but the thing is they're getting these bribes. We get Luger and Smith & Wesson making huge donations to the NRA, the NRA making huge donations.
Luger, you mean Luger as in Senator Luger or Luger as in the gun?
Huge donations to the NRA. The NRA making huge donations to people running for political office. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, they're passing laws not for the safety. If you want to have guns in elementary schools, seriously, if you want to have parents be able to walk in legally into your elementary school with a semi-automatic 9mm weapon on their shoulder, on their hip, give us a call at 941-745 and tell us why that's a great idea. Why it's a great idea to bring guns into college football games. If you believe that's what they should do, give us a call at 941-745-1490.
Change the subject if you like. We can talk about the pillory of Hillary.
Sarasota is home to a true gift. The Posture Clinic of Sarasota with Dr. Mark D'Amato, 4450 South Tamiami Trail. Dr. D'Amato is a veterinary chiropractor, treating horses, dogs, or your favorite four-legged friend. First and foremost, animal chiropractic care is not intended to replace traditional veterinary medicine. Complementary care is a type of care that works with your vet, and certainly not instead of them. To find out more information, call Dr. Mark D'Amato at 941-927-7009. That's 941-927-7009. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mark treats two-legged patients too.
With the animals, with the animals, and
you told me. This part of the Morning Edge is brought to you by Callens, Little, and Delgado, practicing personal injury, criminal defense, and family law. Call 941-749-1446. 941-749-1446.
I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. Turn out the light.
Caller, if you'd like, we're going to have you on the air. You're welcome to ask the question, caller. And do you have a question? And we'll gladly answer it for you. You're on the air live.
Good okay, one. You just said that's what minority people do. Could you explain that?
I don't think we said that.
What was your question?
Okay.
What was minority people? What were minority people? The minority of what? I don't think we were referring.
Oh, I said the minority of the sheriff's department.
Minority of the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
That's the minority that we
okay.
Have.
Okay, I just wanted an explanation. Thank you.
Wait. I got a question. Do you know who the only candidate is who's a Seventh-day Adventist?
I'm an educator, and I don't want guns on campuses. I just don't I never liked guns. That's just me.
No, that's okay. It's we're not proposing that you have guns. We were actually trying to mock the idea of doing that, or make, you know, trying to embarrass the whole notion.
Yeah, it's a minority of the sheriff's departments. 30% of the sheriffs want guns. 70% of the sheriffs are opposed to putting guns in campuses, and that's our question. But we had another question for you. As a teacher, do you know who the only Seventh-day Adventist is who's running for president right now?
Okay, I couldn't understand. I'm having a problem understanding what you're saying.
He's asking the question on the presidential candidates, which candidate is a Seventh-day Adventist? Do you know who that might be?
That's a religion, by the way.
That's a, yeah, if you're aware of that, I'm sure.
Don't know.
Which one is that?
Which candidate do you believe to be a Seventh-day Adventist of the people running for office, either party? Do you have any idea about that? Who it might be? It's. Let me put it this way. It's in the Republican Party, this individual.
Okay, let's put it this way. He is a minority candidate.
He's also a minority, yes.
Yeah.
He's the only Republican who's black.
And he's actually in first place in the Iowa caucuses right now.
Oh, you mean, yeah. Ben Carson.
There you go.
So you're the winner. You've got it right. We want to thank you very much.
Before we let her go, what do you think of him? What is your thoughts on him? Anything?
I don't agree with everything he said. There's a few things that I agree with.
Uh-huh. Which ones? What do you agree with?
Some of the things he said about Muslims, I don't agree with. Some of the other things. He made some wild statements sometimes, but, I mean...
That's all right. You can agree or disagree. That's we're here for, to let you express yourself. We're not trying to hold you back at all. What do you agree with? And is there any one thing you can say you agree with him on?
Not yet.
Well, I like his calm demeanor. The fact is, he talks softly. He's not interested in attacking people. He's very well educated. He comes across very knowledgeable, and without being a mean-spirited person like some of the other candidates are.
Is there a candidate you like among the candidates? Is there one candidate you like the most?
Yes. He's so good. I was a fan of his years ago. From we used to talk about him at church. Uh-huh. And all of his wonderful accomplishments. So. I was already a fan before he got
here. He's a surgeon, right?
Yeah.
And what do you know about him as a surgeon?
Well, he was the first one to successfully disconnect Alzheimer's twins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good job.
Yeah, so what is your name? Can you give your first name, not your last name?
Sharon.
Sharon? Well, look, Sharon, I really appreciate your call, like you can't believe. We really want minority people calling in this show and telling us we don't know what we're talking about or agreeing with us if they choose. I think what you're saying is important, and we don't want just our opinion or you to approve our opinion. We want your opinion on its own legs, and you certainly are doing a good job in that regard. So anytime you feel like calling in on the show and saying what you think, we more than appreciate that, and I want to tell you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you, Sharon.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
So anyway, yes, the Seventh-day Adventist is Ben Carson, and we have Donald Trump saying, I mean, Seventh-day Adventist? I don't know about, I just
what
don't
do they,
know.
What do they do, Floyd? You brought this subject up. It's on your back now. What does the Seventh-day Adventist do? I mean, the advent of a seventh day is Sunday. Now, when that happens, does that mean that they, I mean, under traditional terms, Sunday has been called the Sabbath, but in traditional early terms in the church, in the religion, it was a Saturday, it wasn't a Sunday. And so what happened at the time of Constantine and the early Christians, he changed the Jewish Christian church to the Holy Roman Catholic Church and made it a Sunday away from a Saturday. Didn't want the Jews credited with that, and Christ being a Jew, that to be de-emphasized or even eliminated, which is what has happened. Many people don't think of Christ as a Jew. They say, well, since he's God, it doesn't matter. what origins he had, and all of that. And the fact that he was a dark-skinned man or darker-skinned man with higher melanin and all of that, you can't deal with that. There's a fellow, I go to a football pool every Sunday, and I'm part of it. In fact, last week I won the pool, and this week I'm running close. I might win it again. There's a possibility, outside chance. But there's a fellow there who's a born again, and he and I had a nice conversation, and he kept telling me how I love you, I forgive you. And I said, I said, because I questioned the divinity of Jesus. And he said, well, of course he's God. I said, no. I said, if you recognize his own prayers, the one that they attribute to him, there's not much real history you can tie to Jesus. It's the Our Father, not the My Father. And it's the, we are all children of God from the Sermon on the Mount. And he says, well, he didn't mean that, and he didn't mean that. So the other day I told the same fellow, I said, you got your way. God spoke to me the other day, and he said, yeah, it was supposed to be the My Father. And all the rest of that is history, isn't it? And you guys are right. It's totally right. You're totally going to have it your way, that there is no more Our Father. It's the My Father. And the guy that says it is the one that speaks for all of us. And he's looking at me absolutely thunderstruck. I says, I'm joking.
Anyway, so they, one of the biggest hallmarks, biggest things that's different, is their religious day is on a Saturday.
That's the Seventh Day Adventist.
That's the seventh day. And I had an issue with that for one reason. I was a wrestling coach, actually a championship wrestling coach.
Ooh, and is that because you were a champion?
I was an exceptionally good coach. We went undefeated.
As a wrestler, were you?
I was a college wrestler. I had to beat three state champions from three different states in order to wrestle varsity at Rutgers.
Really?
From Pennsylvania.
Oh, you were at Rutgers.
I wrestled at Rutgers.
Do you know who else was at Rutgers? There used to be a broadcast person here.
Who? Oh yeah, Mitch Mallett. Anyway, so back to the story. So my one of my first experiences with that is one of my better wrestlers was a Seventh Day Adventist. And his religion says, because it's our Sabbath, you're not allowed to wrestle on Saturday. And we had matches typically on a Wednesday and on a Saturday in the early afternoon. So I lost one of my better people because of his religious, well, not his religious beliefs, his parents' religious beliefs.
Yeah.
And otherwise, it's pretty much a traditional, I don't know that much about it from what I heard, but it's a Christian religion, it's a Protestant religion. And because a lot of people aren't familiar with its tenets, we have someone like Donald Trump saying, I don't know about this, he's a Seventh-day Adventist, and implying there's something that may be
wrong.
Well,
Trump this morning announced that he's a Presbyterian.
Yes.
And how much more mainstream?
It is true. That is the most mainstream religion of our presidents we've had. Well, we had some individuals who were a little bit more agnostic in the beginning of our country.
Well, they were deists. They called themselves deists. I mean, you had that with Jefferson. You had that with Paine. You had that with Hamilton and Madison, I believe. These guys, and they were not slave owners. So you had the slave owners were Washington and Jefferson. I'm contradicting myself. Jefferson was also a deist. Interesting contradiction in his own life that he took his mistress to Paris to live with him. It was black. And produced children with her, and wouldn't give up his slaves. But that he is the one real contradictory character. He was such a tremendously talented, bright man, but the slavery issue he couldn't deal with it.
A lot of controversy there. Was he a bad person or a good person? If he did keep his people safe, if he let them go, they could have been taken by somebody else and put in slaves. If he treated them well, and he actually loved them and cared for them, and if in that situation, in that time, if he had freed them, would their life have been far worse? Could they have been taken?
You do raise a good point.
Could they have been taken over by somebody else? I mean, there have been numerous occasions where people have been captured wrongly. There was a movie about that just recently, 7 days, 12 Years a Slave,
mm-hmm.
where people simply say, oh, here's a black man on the streets.
It was in New York.
Yeah. And so as a consequence, mm-hmm. as much as Jefferson has been to be portrayed as a bad guy, was he really doing right by the people? Because, again, if you free these people and somebody else imposes their will on them and takes them over
industry,
as a master.
The slavery industry was so powerful. It was the biggest industry we had in this country, more than the cotton, more than anything else.
More than the NRA?
Well, if that's the biggest industry today, but I don't think so. But in those times, it was the biggest money dealing that there was, the selling of people. It was $4 to $5 billion in dollars at that time, not in dollars and interpreted today, at $4 billion of those times. So nothing matched that. And so give that up was going to be tooth and tongue, and the South was not about to do it.
And money is what our government is about. You have the pharmaceuticals, which make tremendous amounts of money. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry. You have the NRA, which is a huge successful industry. You have the oil lobby, which is a huge successful industry. And they run our government right now, and sometimes to the detriment, well, often to the detriment of our society. We have smoking that causes just an enormous amount of deaths in America. And we have the NRA. We're talking more people killed by guns in America every year than
guns
we lost,
make you feel safe.
That we lost in Vietnam.
But Floyd, guns make you feel safe. Don't you feel warm and fuzzy when you got a gun in your pocket?
Not when I'm in McDonald's. I see somebody else who walks in a little bit tipsy or a little bit, you know, belligerent.
Well, maybe he's
and
very
he has
calm.
A holster with a
but
gun right
tell
there.
Tell him something he didn't want to hear. And
yeah, that's all it takes. And that's... Yeah. He can simply say, I was standing my ground. He threatened me. He threatened. He
His words
me.
Threatened
he
me.
He buttoned up my coffee. My coffee spilled on my shirt. It was a white shirt. I got burned a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's. But keep in mind, money is what is driving, has been driving our politics, our political system, whether it was slavery, the money for slavery,
well,
money from
that way,
pharmaceuticals,
Floyd.
The money from oil.
How do we change that?
Well, I think that we have one candidate. One candidate. And that's his main goal for running for president.
But he's a gunman.
He's gone back and forth on that. He certainly has.
You're talking about Bernie.
And that has been his weakness, absolutely. But there's only one candidate out of all the people running who simply says our problem is our government that is run by the big, huge corporations. It's a government for the few,
so you don't think,
not the government for the many.
You don't think Hillary can do much about that, huh?
Hillary's not really talking. He's not... Bernie is waving the flag.
You keep saying but I think Hillary is she, but yeah.
Hillary is a little bit more, is a lot more conservative than Bernie. Hillary voted for the war in Iraq. Hillary has taken a lot of conservative positions compared to Bernie. Bernie's biggest issue is having a government for the people, returning our Constitution to what it was about in the original days, the original intent, government by the people. And
well, she did herself a lot of good, you have to admit. And Charles Blow, who's a black man, writes, at one point during the hearing, that's with Trey Gowdy, the prosecutor.
We're talking about the Benghazi hearing.
The Benghazi hearing. Oh, my God, Benghazi, Benghazi, Benghazi. But here's a little bit more. At one point during the hearing, Chairman Trey Gowdy, a Republican, said, this is not a prosecution. But it was an attempted persecution. It simply failed. Charles Blow was writing this for the New York Times. Instead, she was poised, knowledgeable, and unflappable. She turned out, she turned the tables. The committee was on trial and found very much lacking in motives and authority and in class. I keep being surprised by the astonished degree to which Clinton's opponents continue to underestimate her. She is far from flawless, but she is no slouch or dummy. She is sharp and tough and resilient. She is a rock, and she is not about to be trifled with. The Clintons, as a couple and individually, are battle-hardened. They are not new to this. They are survivors. Even when they lose, they survive. No upstart congressman or woman can do more damage than has already been done and dealt with. Why can't and why don't these people see that? Oh, well. Several Republicans had suggested what many already assumed, that the committee was established or strayed from its course in an effort to hurt Clinton's political prospects. Make no mistake. This field has been plowed. This investigation is looking increasingly like a boondoggle, a spectacular waste of time and money. So there you have the opinion, some of the opinion of Charles Blow. who is a black man, by the way. So he's speaking in favor of Hillary. Do we have a caller?
We have a caller. Welcome to the Morning Edge. You have a comment.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Oh, I think I recognize this fellow. He's a good conservative Republican.
It's your famous radio tellerist put on trial by Henry Raines and...
the Jay and Julie show.
No, it wasn't Jay and Julie's show. You guys didn't do it to me. Henry did it.
Yeah, Henry did as well. Welcome to the show. Welcome back.
He was making a point. Go ahead, make your point.
All right, anyways, what's the gun issue? Number one is, the gun issue is our right to bear arms.
It's well-regulated, yeah.
No, well-regulated by who?
It says militia. It says the first part of the first sentence in the Second Amendment. It says that.
Who's the militia?
It's whoever the government says it is.
Now, the militia actually is a state. Militia is a state.
Absolutely not. The militia is the citizens of... When that was written, the militia was the citizens. There was no army. There was no government control of the militia at that time.
But
the militia
was... What you're doing, though, now, you're going to have to re-say your name.
This is Peter.
Peter, there you go. I knew it was Peter, but I wanted Peter to say it. In any event, Peter, you're saying what it was intended at the beginning. Well, do you know how far back that was written originally?
I don't care when it was written.
Well,
The First Amendment was written back then, too. Do we change that?
Well, you're not listening to... I mean, I get to listen, and you get to listen. We can take turns here listening. So right now, I'm going to simply make a point that it's written and it's interpreted today to mean what it means today. You cannot select part of the Second Amendment and say the other part, well, that was written long ago. And I can't do the same thing either way, can we?
No, I'm not saying it isn't a well-controlled militia. It is a well-controlled militia. Okay, and the militia is the public, the citizens, not the government. Let me ask you this. What was the Second Amendment written for? What's the reason for that?
Well, there are opinions all over the place on that. It was written by the Swiss originally, if you want to go to origins. And the Swiss did that in 1200. That's how far back it goes. And today, if you follow the example of the Swiss, everybody, yourself, myself, is included, is required to have a gun, provided you can fire it on a monthly basis. You have to show up with that gun, you bring it to a place, an armory or whatever, and you show you can use that gun properly. And there's only one gun you're allowed to use, and that's it. That's what the Swiss do today. Now, the machine gun has been banned under U.S. federal law. It was banned at the time of Capone and company in the 30s, and so certain guns have been banned. And we could go to the point of banning certain guns, the AK-47 or some things like that.
That gun's not banned anymore. And by the way, it was the only thing machine guns are banned because they're continuous fire. That's why they're banned.
So machine guns and AK-47s have something in common.
AK-47s that are sold in this country are not continuous fire.
Well, when you say continuous fire, what do you mean by that?
You can, on a continuous fire gun, you can pull a trigger. It's like a machine gun, and it'll just keep firing. You don't have to keep pulling.
So you have to pull the trigger every time to fire a bullet in an AK-47?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, that are sold in this country.
Okay, so there's no...
Okay, you can modify the gun. You can modify the gun so it's continuous fire. There are some, and you can have machine guns in this country. You have to have a special permit, but they are allowed, but it's under, strict.
Well, the Germans have an idea, too, and I think you might want to consider this and it still allows you to have a gun. But the Germans say, like the Swiss, the gun you have is the gun you must show expert use with, and you have to show up, and you have to pass tests in order to keep it. And that's each and every gun you have to do that with in Germany today. So you can have a variety of guns that way.
Neither the Swiss nor the Germans have a constitutional amendment to bear. Anyways, you didn't answer my question.
Oh, okay.
The question is, the founding fathers of this country, why did they write in the Second Amendment to the Constitution? What was the reason for that?
Well, you tell me what you think it is. I can tell you what
I'm
going to
tell you exactly what it is. Oh. It is. They wrote that in case the government became tyrannical and the people could defend themselves against a tyrannical government.
That's the only reason
it's there.
Well, it was there also because of what the Brits had done, and so that goes along.
I don't know about what
that's
right. Yes,
we're not in disagreement there. I have guns myself, Peter.
Peter, here's an interesting thought. So you're saying, based upon our Constitution, our founding fathers, even though it said regulated, in having everybody walk into McDonald's with a gun in their hip is not regulated, but we'll assume that was their intent, to have people go into church, into schools with guns on their hip. The Constitution also talked about the 3/5 of a person for slaves. It talked about it permitted slavery. So if we're allowed to have unregulated guns, as opposed to what the Constitution says, well-regulated, if we're allowed to have unregulated guns, and that's what the Constitution said, shouldn't we still also allow slavery and have blacks count as 3/5 of a person for population reasons too?
Well, there was an amendment to the Constitution that changed that. Mm-hmm. That was rewritten. It was done through the proper means. It wasn't due through government regulation. It was done through lawmakers who decided that was a bad thing, and it was done through a process.
That's where you come from, is that if you're going to change the Second Amendment, you have to amend it? Is that what you're saying?
You're going to have to, and it won't be changed. Let me give you two examples of the Taylor Two Cities, real quick. Mm-hmm. Houston, Texas, and Detroit, Michigan, about are the same on a lot of levels. Income, population.
Oh, I would not say so.
I've got the report.
Okay, we'll assume you're right, Pete. Yeah. Go.
It goes through the whole list of the population, the division of the population. Detroit, Michigan has zero gun stores and zero handgun permits legally. Okay? You cannot have it.
Mm-hmm.
Houston, Texas, just the Texas, and I think it's included, I think it's Harris County, has 1,800 gun stores. Either directly dealing with guns or a hardware store like an Ace or somebody, a chain store that sells guns, all right? In Texas, you can take and have and wear a gun on your belt, but there are stickers on stores that don't allow you to walk in with a store. Now, that's the store's discretion to allow you to walk in with a gun or not. So if you have a firearm on your hip, and you can't walk into the store, if that sticker is on the door, you can't walk in the door. Anyways, going back to the Tale of Two Cities, Detroit has, I think, 2,500 murders a year, equal back to Houston, Texas, which has about 600 murders of the year, and this was done back in 2011 or 2012 the report.
First, let's establish one little thing. Houston is how big?
Houston is in Detroit. You mean in population?
Yes, uh-huh.
Millions.
Millions. More than a million?
More than a million.
Okay. Let me make a point. We're not in such disagreement that we can't make a point here. I don't think it's a good comparison because Detroit has shrunk down to, I think, below 700,000, actual population of Detroit right now. It was at one time in the millions, but so many areas have been bulldozed and left vacant lots forever, as the eye can see, that it is not what it was.
It's not. It absolutely not, and I agree with you on that, Augie, but this report was 2010 or 2011.
I'm going to agree with what you're saying, but there's one little thing. There was an article published just this past week that did a survey of states that have strict gun regulation bills as opposed to states that don't. And the survey that came out just this week showed that there were less gun murders and they include suicides in this, and less domestic violence using guns, and less robberies using guns in the states with stronger regulations than in the states that allowed open carry laws. I'm sure that you can give exceptions. Detroit is Detroit, and maybe Baltimore are notoriously crime-ridden cities compared to other different parts of our country.
By the way, speaking about that, mm-hmm. Who runs those cities, by the way? What party?
I'm going to answer this because the governor of Michigan is Republican, and they now basically run the city of Detroit because they appointed an administrator in charge of several cities in Michigan, not the mayor. not the mayor. So who's a Democrat? They have really virtually no say-so in the state of Michigan. So I think you better do a little more research on that one.
That's a recent event. But I've got the list.
That's
of
in the last 2-3 years.
I've got the that's a in recent times. Mm-hmm. If you go back and look, all the cities that are blighted now by recession, depression, crime, mm-hmm. like you said, they bulldozed Detroit. They bulldozed. I just spoke to someone that moved from Detroit to Florida. They didn't live in the city. They lived in the suburbs. They said they're just mowing down house after house.
That's right.
They did, but they did say there was some areas coming back.
That's
but
true.
All the cities with all the high crime, high unemployment, have been run by Democrats for years
well,
and years
the,
and
the
years.
The thing you're overlooking a little bit is that those were very big manufacturing centers that were sold out under Reagan and the shipping of jobs overseas, but you know,
Reagan didn't ship any jobs overseas. Well,
Pete, this is a wonderful conversation. I'm happy that you called here. I hope you give us a call next time.
Don't be reluctant.
We always enjoy hearing from you, Peter.
I don't get too much of an opportunity to call you with my work schedule.
When you do, please do. We really enjoy it.
I love calling you guys up, and I'm glad you're still on the air.
Well, we're going to be. Okay. It's 3 years now.
And Augie, give Mitch a kiss for me, will you, please?
Okay, Pete. Have a wonderful day. Call us again. We always enjoy discussing with you.
Bye.
Thanks, Peter.
Yeah, you're welcome. Bye.
Study, we couldn't work, and the situation of Afghanistan was very bad.
In Jordan on Sunday, Secretary of State John Kerry announced major plans by Israel to try and ease tensions.